Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Pick a door.
All right, then.
No, that's my door. Pick another door.
What's wrong with you?
And take control. We've got unfinished business. Your sister took something from me. A virus that could wipe out half the population, and I want it back.
You want to tell me just what we're dealing with here?
It's my sister. Family business.
When it's the fate of the world, it becomes my business.
Why, hello there, everyone, and Rain Man in digital listening land. It's Brian Smith bringing you another episode of Critique Revolve. Joining me today is none other than Gregory Holmes. Say hello, Greg.
How's it going, ladies and gentlemen?
All right. So Greg and I went and saw a movie today, and that movie is the huge tentpole blockbuster summer extravaganza known as Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, a PG-13 offering, runtime of about 135 minutes. Lawman Luke Hobbs and outcast Deckard Shaw form an unlikely alliance when a cyber-genetically enhanced villain threatens the future of humanity. Yeah, so this one brings back Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Hobbs and Jason Statham as Shaw, who we last saw in, was it Fate of the Furious?
Fate of the Furious.
We also get introduced to Hattie, played by Vanessa Kirby, and Queenie comes back. That's Helen Mirren. And Brixton, played by Idris Elba. So it's a Fast and the Furious movie. It's the 728th film in the franchise.
It's like Rocky 23.
So. Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is what Back to the Future told us was going to happen.
Right.
Right. The 700 and whatever billionth one.
Star Wars or whatever it was.
Well, and here's the thing with these movies. And I know that I reviewed Fate of the Furious. I believe Thomas and I did that one. And, you know, it was it's a Fast and the Furious movie. You know exactly what you're going to get. You know, this one's directed by David Leitch. Is it Leitch?
I thought it was David Leitch.
Leitch? I don't know. It's the guy that gave us, Deadpool 2, Atomic Blonde. He produced John Wick. I think he did, Escape Plan?
Escape Plan.
Yeah, Second Leg.
He did Born Legacy. He did Mechanic.
Right. So, I mean, he's done, Mechanic is a great movie, by the way. But anyway, he's done a lot of action movies. Right, which is exactly what we expect from a Hobbs and Shaw film, right?
Right.
And so in going into this, I think that, you know, having seen all of the Fast and the Furious movies, mostly because I had to review them for the network, not by choice, is that, you know, I believe we talked about it with Fate of the Furious, was that it went from being this kind of local car club family atmosphere to they're now all triple X. They're all, you know, superheroes.
Well, it went from like all the Fast and the Furious movies were, it was about the cars and,
right,
and the scene around them. And
well, the second one, not so much, because the second one was, well, yeah, the cars were still involved, but it became more about cops.
Well,
the third one was, they went back to the original.
Right. So they kind of started, you know, throwing other elements into it to kind of continue the story.
Right. And it was supposed to be a continuation of Brian's story.
Right.
Or in the third one, you get a little bit of the Vin Diesel tie
back
in.
Right. You kind of get, you know, the main characters of the series. And then, you know, you have that offshoot with Tokyo Drift, which, I mean, I've seen all the Furious Fate, whatever movies. I've seen all of them out of choice and / boredom. But I enjoyed Tokyo Drift out of all of them.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The first one and Tokyo Drift are the only two that I have ever seen more than once.
Because those are
the best ones. To me personally, those are the ones that I appreciate.
They're entertaining,
the
and there's a little bit more to them than the other ones.
Well, I actually feel like they're the two that are the most set in like reality. You know, because if you look at where the franchise has gone over the course of the last, you know, what, 8-10 years, however long it's been.
It's gone into that realm of kind of,
it's ridiculous.
Of suspended reality, like where.
Well, it's beyond that, though.
Well, no, but it's still in reality, but
But
it starts hinging. Well,
they drive cars off of buildings.
I say reality with air quotations, but then they add in that completely out of the norm. Like, you know, there's really a lot of ways where you couldn't pull off some of the stuff that they've done. Not because you don't have the right cars or anything, but because a lot of that shit's really impossible. Like taking out a tank with regular, you know, even with souped up cars is fucking impossible.
So here's my thing. And what we complained about before, and I don't want to harp on it too much, was the lack of a base in reality. And I think that is one of those things where when you go into a Fast and the Furious movie, you have to, for lack of a better word, you have to suspend belief, right? Like you don't have a choice. The movies have gotten so ridiculous, and with every new movie, they have to do something bigger and something more. You know, in the first movie, you just had the cars. In the second movie, you had cars doing some flips. Then in the third movie, it was all about drifting, so that was a little bit of a reprieve from having to one-up it. Then you get into the fourth and the fifth and the sixth movies, and even the seventh, I think, at this point, and the eighth movie, and they just have to keep doing more and more and more and more to make it the stakes higher, I guess. You know, when you're driving a car out of the back of a plane and having it land on a road drivable. Like, no, they crate that shit. No, that's not how things work.
Well, yeah, it totally pulls it out of any real feasible reality and puts it into that fantasy realm reality.
Right, which is fine if that's what you want to do, but then don't tell me that they work for the CIA. Don't tell me that, you know, and honestly, dude, here's the other thing. On what planet do VCR thieves start working for the CIA? Like, when does that ever fucking happen? This isn't fucking Catch Me If You Can. That's not real life anymore. That's not how that works. Like, and remember, in the original Fast and Furious, it was VCRs they were stealing, not DVD players. VCRs.
And for those listeners that don't know what a VCR is, a VCR was a machine that played things that were called VHS tapes. VHS tapes came before DVDs.
But after Betamax.
True. And before the fabled Laserdisc.
Oh, Laserdisc. So huge.
So for those of you that go into a Goodwill and you see that thing that has a little flappy box, that is a VHS player or a VCR.
You said Goodwill, right? Not Fascinations?
No, Goodwill.
Not the flappy box at Fascinations.
No, not the flappy box at Fascinations. That's called the glory hole, folks.
Oh, okay. So anyways, guys, so with the Fast and Furious movies, you know, you go into this one and what they've done here is they've broken apart from the main cast, which is, you know, Vin Diesel and Tyrese Gibson and Michelle
Rodriguez.
Thank you, Rodriguez. And what, Paget Brewster?
I think so.
That was Walker's wife,
yeah,
I guess,
in the movie
by the end. But anyway, and so they've broken away from that group, and you get this offshoot, which is the Jason Statham character of Shaw and the Rock's character of Hobbs, right? And so because Hobbs and Shaw aren't necessarily recognizable names, you have to put Fast and Furious Presents on top of the billing, I suppose. And I think that one of the biggest takeaways for me from the movie was it doesn't feel like a Fast and Furious movie. The cars aren't important at all. Actually, they don't discuss the cars at all until the very, very end of the movie, where you have a small part about cars, but
it's
not relevant to the story.
Right. There's no, like, in all the previous ones, even the later ones where they kind of complete one, it was always about the car.
The cars still matter. Like when, what was it? Tyrese drives the Lamborghini on ice.
Yeah. He's all fucking stoked about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But and
is it Ludacris that's in those?
Yeah. Ludacris is in those.
Yeah.
But the thing is that with those, within this one, and I said it, I think during the film, that if they had just taken this story, they could have still gotten The Rock and Jason Statham and have them play those type of characters, but they could have renamed it. And because it isn't, like you said, it doesn't feel like a Fast and the Furious movie
at all. And adding, you know, the Fast and the Furious name to it doesn't add anything to the story. It just gives it that
marquee billing that people are like, oh, Fast and the Furious, I know what that is. Let me go see that.
Well, and it also ties in then, of course, you know,
the characters
of Hobbs and Shaw who didn't like each other in the last movie. They were forced to work together, right?
Yeah,
that was the whole. That was like the plot.
That whole thing was
essentially
that they ended
up
having to work together, and you know, at the end, yeah, they got the job done, but they didn't like each other.
Right, and at the beginning of this movie, they still don't like each other. And here's the other thing, guys, about once again, with Fast and Furious movies, they were not funny at the beginning. Like, let's be very clear.
They're actually very serious.
The very first four movies were not funny. And Letty died.
And see, the thing, since they kind of branched this off of the Fast and the Furious series, but the thing is, like you said, you know, they still don't like each other. And to me, I think, like, you know, okay, so there's one plot point is they don't get along. Like, at some point they have to be like, you know what, we have to get along to get this done. And to me, I think, like, the sad thing is that it takes them the entire film to accomplish that.
Well, and that's we'll get into that, Greg. We'll get into that. But I think that, like, what kills me about the whole franchise is that at this point, I think Guardians of the Galaxy kind of kicked it off. And we've talked about this ad nauseum on this fucking show. But Guardians of the Galaxy kicked it off where everything has to be funny now. Everything. You know, Civil War had to be funny. Endgame had to be funny. The Spider-Man movies have to be funny. You know, Lady Thor is going to be funny. I guarantee it. Thor Ragnarok, funny. And it's all because Marvel and and by extension, then the large studios figured out what works for the summer audience. And what works for the summer audience is joke, 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 fart joke, kind of strained relationship between two characters, but not strained to the point that they actually hate each other. Joke, joke, joke. Blow some shit up, fight, 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 joke, joke, fight, joke, blow some shit up, make friends, make nice, think everything's resolved. It's not. Blow some more shit up, more resolution of the two characters who have already, you know, essentially made nice.
Yeah.
And end. That's every fucking movie at this point. You don't get any, there's no difference in storytelling. Every movie feels exactly the same. You go point A, point B, point C, throw in some dick and fart jokes, maybe say something about your mom, and you're done. And that's how you write a movie now. And that is, it's lazy. It's just plain lazy. And I get that it works, and I understand that. And I understand that you don't make a $200 million movie unless you have a formula that works. And I understand it. It doesn't mean I have to like it. It doesn't mean that I have to be okay with the fact that that is how movies are made now, because I will never be okay with that, because that's not good storytelling. Those aren't good movies. They might be entertaining. They might make you forget how shitty your life is for 135 minutes, right? And you'll get some more extra jokes thrown in because, of course, you have to have the cameos from the other popular franchises. Right.
Right. So with that, with Hobbs and Shaw, it's still kind of the same formula as the Fast and the Furious movies. There's some big thing that needs to be resolved, and only
right, you gotta save the world. Save the world from certain annihilation.
And only in the Fast and Furious films, it was only this crew can do it.
Right, because they're super special because they stole VCRs.
So in this one, Hobbs and Shaw have to come together to save the world from total annihilation,
right?
Or, you know, biological apocalypse. And so with that, you have Hobbs and Shaw going to great lengths and outlandish action sequences to stop Idris Elba or Brixton.
I would actually say that the Hobbs and Shaw parts of the action sequences weren't too outrageous. It's the Brixton parts, who is the quote unquote black Superman. Those are the issues. And I know that I think one of the things that this movie did do well, and I will give them credit here, was acknowledging other films and being a little bit meta, because that's also part of the formula, right? You have to be a little bit meta, not too meta, not Deadpool meta, but a little bit meta, right? So, and so you have to acknowledge the fact that Black Superman was what everybody thought Black Adam was going to be with The Rock, right? In the Shazam film. And then, you know, the Rock wanted to be Superman forever, and that was always the running gag, right? And then you also had them talk about the Italian Job and The Mechanic and all of these other films that the two main actors had been in. And it happened over and over again in the movie, to the point that it was almost like, yeah, we get it. They've been in movies.
And that's the thing, is like those would have been cool nods if they weren't overdone. So essentially you have Hobbs and Shaw coming together, not very willingly, to stop Brixton from, in surprise, spoiler alert, saving Shaw's sister, who is carrying a deadly programmable virus to save the world and also her.
Right, because programmable viruses are real, and they can be encapsulated in something that only survives for 72 hours in the bloodstream, and then can be brought out of the blood somehow from,
from some extraction machine.
Right.
Because we all know that, you know, the encapsulating can be done because we do have M&Ms that melt in your mouth, but not in your hand.
But that's not true. They melt in your hand too, man.
Shut up. Let's go with the fantasy, okay? And we have this, and you think, okay, programmable virus, a little bit out of the norm. Okay, super soldier, okay. We had Universal Soldier with Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren, okay.
I'd go even one step further and say the G.I. Joe, the horrible G.I. Joe movie with the super suits.
Or you can even go with Soldier with Kurt Russell.
I love that movie, though.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool little sci-fi.
So
you have this, and you have this film, and where it comes down to is that the sequences of Hobbs and Shaw, that's what you expect from them. That's what you get from The Rock when he does his other movies that aren't Fast and the Furious movies. That's what you get from Jason Statham when he does his action films like The Mechanic, or when he did Transporter.
I actually disagree here because I feel like the scenes where it was just the two of them are a completely different they're completely different from what you normally get from those guys.
No, but I'm saying like that's like them. That's not.
You mean they're playing the same characters that they've always played? Right. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what I'm saying. Is that you get the characters that they always play, but it's in the realm of Fast and Furious. It's those characters in this world.
I think that actually the thing that was the most disconcerting for me in the whole thing was the rapid fire quips that were between the two of them. Because that was not how they were even two movies ago.
But see that, and like for me, that's what was a little bit of a takeaway for me from this film was like, okay, we get it. They don't like each other. There doesn't always have to be this back and forth about The Rock being a giant musclehead idiot and the Jason Statham being a little pussy. Like, because he's not big and muscular, he's tiny. We get it. Okay.
I mean, the dude is like 5'11".
Oh no, but I'm saying it's like they overdo it with the quips, and you're just like, fuck, we get it. All right, just get to the stuff. And like, this movie was a slow burn, and it shouldn't have been, because there are points I'm like, this could have been done a hell of a lot quicker. Like, why does this have to kind of like fucking drag on a bit?
Here's the thing. Like, so from a technical standpoint, let's do some of the technical stuff real quick. The soundtrack is atrocious. Absolutely horrible. The opening song is one of my favorite songs, actually. Time in a Bottle by Jim Croce, but not performed by Jim Croce.
Performed by Youngblood, which is spelled Youngblud.
Right. And much like the spelling of his name, he butchered the song. So it was tough from the beginning for me, from a soundtrack standpoint. And even a dialogue standpoint, I feel like some of the dialogue was difficult to understand. Part of that is just because of the English accent and the Cockney kind of accent that Statham does have. And I always have that issue with Statham movies.
But they use a lot of British slang.
Because remember, Elba is British as well.
Right. So you can't, it's not as funny to us as it would be to somebody who was from there. Or even if you know some of the slang.
Right.
It's funny. But if you don't, you're just kind of like.
Yeah, it was a little bit difficult, which is fine. Like, I understand it. That doesn't bug me as much. The CGI in it was laughable. And it always has been in the Fast and the Furious movies. I mean, starting with, was it Fast 2?
I think
Fast
2 Furious.
Where they had the fake CGI cars that looked ridiculous. Hey,
but you know what, though? It was still way better than House of the Dead.
You know what, though, man? House of the Dead is a 25-year-old movie.
I know.
Let it go. So... No. I think it's one of those things where, you know, the CGI was not great. The soundtrack was just bad. And actually one of the most racist soundtracks I think I've ever heard. Like, everything was a stereotypical. Like, if they went to a different place,
played a song that would fit what you would hear
there. Quote unquote fit what a white person thinks they would hear there, I think is the best way to say that. It was very stereotypical. Which, I mean, fine, whatever.
It was a safe pick.
Sure, it's safe picks because everything's racist now and that's okay.
Well, I mean, to safe picks, like, oh, I think this is like, okay, I heard this on my last trip there, so I think this is okay.
Right. No, I understand. And so, you know, the sound's bad and the CGI is bad. And
see, like going with CGI, like there's, so the CGI is one thing that I had a problem with, and this is from a straight design standpoint of being an artist and being a 3D art, you know, modeler and all that, is Idris Elba's Idris Elba's his motorcycle. I don't know if it was a fucking transformer that's been enslaved, or if it was some like weird, cool hype, like super, you know, smart bike. But at first, like in the beginning of the film, it rolls up to him. Like,
that's okay. Like, I'm okay with that.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
But then there's scenes like where it morphed itself like to fit around things. And I'm like, you know what? Like, we don't get an explanation of what really this bike is. Like, we do everything else in the film.
Right. No, they're very, very quick to explain pretty much everything to you.
Except the bike.
Except for the bike. And the bike was actually one of the coolest parts of the movie.
I thought, like, so for me, like, when it kept doing this cool shit, I'm like, if it's doing all this stuff, like, and in the film, Idris Elba plays a super modified soldier who's, you know,
he's been rebuilt. He's been rebuilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, and in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, he has this bike that transforms, that kind of interacts with him, like that. It would also kind of be like his mobile arsenal. Like it would essentially transform into like weapons and shit.
So you want it to be not Optimus Prime, but
Megatron.
The original Megatron that just turned into a handgun.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, but that's what I mean. It's like, if you're gonna have this bike do all this cool shit, it should be able to do other stuff, like pop out a gun or some shit, or you know, the fucking wheels pop off and
So here's the thing. There were some weird choices from a costuming standpoint as well. When you look at just the Idris Elba character, he has a gun prominently featured on his left pec that I don't believe he ever used.
He used it once or twice in the beginning, I think.
Right. Okay. But it's like, it's there and it looks very out of place.
It just looks like a last minute design choice where they're just like, they had different options. And then somebody was like, you know, a lot of these look practical, but that one with the gun on his shoulder, that looks really fucking cool. So that's not really like something that somebody would do, because it's not really like, you know, easy like to get that gun off of there. Like, 'cause if you're moving, like you gotta, you know.
The thing is, it almost looks like it's Velcroed on, and it's not good.
It's probably magnets.
It's not good. Well, I mean, probably. I don't know, man. I mean,
that's the thing is, like, is that a lot of the choices. And then what I thought was funny was you have him in this really cool gear. Or cool looking gears, as they put it out there to be, but then every other person in the company or the mercenaries that he's working with, they're just plain fucking tactical gear and ninja masks.
Well, not even ninja masks, dude. Most of them were in like ski masks, like the new school's ski mask.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they just kind of like, here you guys go.
Right. It was kind of like, yo, we're going to spend, you know, $400 billion on this one dude, but all you get with you are a bunch of $8.99 soldiers, you know, it was like if you go, like when you,
it was like, hey, did you sign up for the Universal Soldier Program?
No.
Sweet. There's a 2-year waiting list and you have to do a lot of shit before we let you in.
No,
but when we let you in, it's also going to be $2.99 down and then $1.99 a month.
No, it's almost like when your mom and your dad would buy you like the good G.I. Joes. And then occasionally you get like those Tyco G.I. Joes.
Well, for me, it was I would get Transformers and then I would get a GoBot every once in a while.
But here's what I'm saying, though. Like, you'd get like the G.I. Joes, right? Who look badass.
Right.
Right. You get like Snake Eyes and fucking.
You get all the cool ones. Right. And then you get
the Tyco, quote unquote, soldier. And that's all it was. It had no name.
It was just soldier.
It's just soldier.
Right? And see, what's really shitty is I actually liked GoBots. Because when you got it, you got your Transformer. Then they hand you and you're like, this is a GoBot. Well, it's the same thing, isn't it? No, the fuck it is not.
That's like when they say, when you're like, I'd like a Coke, and they're like, is Pepsi okay? No, it's actually not. Like, no, they're very different tastes.
Did I say, can you give me a soda? I said, give me a Coke, stupid bitch.
So anyway, it's not the waitress's fault, Greg.
No, it's not. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's the owner's fault.
Bring your owner here. I'm going to call him a stupid bitch.
So anyway, you know, looking at this movie, it's kind of very much, it falls into that vein where like you have like a bunch of nameless, faceless soldiers behind your main bad guy, right? Who at one point in the film actually refers to himself as I'm the bad guy. Fuck off. Like, but so see, many like, cringeworthy moments of dialogue.
And see, what's funny is that with that scene, like, for me, like with Idris Elba, the way he can deliver lines, I was like, eh, okay, whatever. Like, that's kind of cool. But then it's like, okay, but then he has these moments like, where he's not so much the bad guy. He's just kind of like, well, I'm doing this for the good of humanity. And then at the end, he becomes a total fucking bad guy where he's just.
But you have to remember, dude, that all bad guys feel like they're the good guy.
Touché.
Like that is the thing. All bad guys feel they're the good guy, and all the bad guys feel the good guys are the bad guys. Right. For the most part, except for like, you know, like super, super bad people like Lex Luthor. Well, no, Lex Luthor always feels like he's the good guy.
I think you just
Joker. The Joker knows he's bad.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, no, yeah, the Joker. Yeah,
yeah, the Joker. Okay, so well, I mean, he's not bad. He's just chaotic. But either way. So anyway,
he's chaotic evil or is he chaotic neutral?
Well, he's not neutral. Anyway, so when you're looking at it, like, you know, this movie has the main characters, of course, that we know, and they introduce Idris Elba because you have to have a bad guy now in the Fast and the Furious franchise, not just some Asian dude that wants to take your VCRs.
It's not just some, like, you know, group.
Well, I mean, because if you think about it, you had the Charlize Theron, right, where she stole Vin Diesel's baby's mom and baby.
Yeah.
Which was fucking weird.
Yeah, that was kind of awkward.
Right? And so, like, that's the new thing, though, is that you have, like, a bad guy. Well, and this movie, and spoiler alert here, guys, just so you know, this movie does set up a sequel, without a shadow of a doubt. And we'll actually get into some more spoilers in a little bit, talking about some of the cameos that were in the movie that we alluded to earlier. Anyway, so, but, I mean, when you're looking at the movie, like, it, like I said, it's formulaic as fuck. It's exactly what you expect from a Fast and the Furious movie. And if you like those kind of movies, just like I said about Fate of the Furious and the one that came after that, I can't remember what it was.
I think it was like Furious 8 or Fate of the Furious.
No, that was the one before that.
It was like Fast 9 or something like that.
I can't remember, dude. But either way, like,
if you like those films,
if you like those movies, you're going to love this. I mean, you'll literally love this because here's the thing. The production quality is still there. It's exactly the same as the others. The writing has gotten funnier, which is what audiences seem to want. If our screening was any fucking indication, dick and fart jokes play well for the masses. And this is a PG-13 movie with some pretty bad language, actually.
Yeah, they had a ton of swearing in this. I thought it was rated R.
As did I. But it was one of those, like, it was weird swearing. It was a lot of mouthing swear words.
It was a lot of, like, mouthing. And there was, like, a lot of, like, hand gestures, like jerking off and all, you know, jizzing on somebody.
Yeah, like weird stuff that you don't see in most PG-13 movies. Yeah. But there was no blood. There was very little blood. There was no spray.
No, there's no spray.
No spray. So a PG-13 rating, I guess, is okay.
But see, and that's the thing is with these films now. And I think this has been something that's been with films over the, like, I would say that's, this has been the wave that has been a change in summer films like these big blockbuster summer films is, like you said, they're very formulaic. They're there to entertain the masses. And
oh no, I know they're not making this movie for me, dude.
Well, no, let me finish my point because I know that's what you're going to chime in and say is that they're for the masses. And then people that go to movies for a good story, to see something that kind of pushes the envelope, it's going to be lost on them because they're going to walk in and sit down like you did through the entire film. Like, you were cringing in your seat. You were just like, God damn it. Like, well, you could just tell you're like, please fucking end.
Well, and that's the answer. There's four goddamn endings to the movie.
Well, and see, I'm sitting there and I'm just like, okay, this is what I thought it was going to be when I walked in. Like, I'm entertained and I'm, you know. And I like The Rock. I like Idris Elba. I like Jason Statham. I grew up watching The Rock in wrestling. So, I mean,
well, no, and that's fine. And here's the thing, dude. I like all three of those actors as well. Let me be clear here. The three actors were not my issue with this movie.
But it's the fact that the movie itself presents nothing that it takes away from what it adds. And so what I said is it adds too much comedy. And we even talked about this where it's like old 80s action films where those films were horribly bad, but they knew they were and they just went with it.
They would take themselves so seriously that it was good.
And that's the thing is that this movie, if the movie didn't have all the comedy and all the little quips and shit, like the overuse of all of them, it would have been in that same vein as those 80s action films.
And I would have been fine with that if they went that route, but they made a choice.
The thing is that now whenever a movie like this is made, they have to have jokes. They have to have these quips and everything throughout the entire film. And as much as I enjoy Deadpool, Deadpool is the cause of all this.
It's not Deadpool, dude. It happened before Deadpool.
But I'm saying, like, Deadpool's kind of the bigger thing now because now everybody's like, oh, we can do all this comedy in this film, but have it be serious and have it be violent.
Well, and like, so the thing that always worked for me about the Fast and the Furious movies in the past was that they were A, based in reality, and B, there was an overwhelming sense that this could have been your neighbor, right? Like your neighbor who's always working on his car in his garage. Maybe he has a group of guys that he goes and hangs out with on the weekends where they all drink beer and eat barbecue together, right? Like, and that was always, I think, what kind of drew me into like the first movie and even the Tokyo Drift, where you still had like this community of guys, right? Like they used they used what Lucas Black is the kid that came into the community, and what Little Bow Wow was
the guy that introduced them to the community.
And it worked.
But that's, and the thing is like when the first Fast and Furious came out, you know, like souped up cars like that, that whole car scene was blowing up.
It did. And it was actually huge. And it got bigger after the movie came out.
And that's because like the movie kind of introduced people to that scene. And then when Tokyo Drift came out, that's when drifting was the big thing with everybody. That's when drifting was the new big.
Well, that was like Need for Speed had come out, and what was it, Drift Kings, and all of those video games that like you could live that dream. But
why those worked really well is because it was more based in reality, and it showed like those scenes. And the thing with like Tokyo Drift is like that's how that scene is there. That drift scene was like, it was secretive. Like it had to be done like, you know, they did all these things in secret, and they emulated that like extremely well in the film.
Right.
Whereas like you have, and then you go on and like, okay, now we have these bad guys. Now we have this, you know, conflict that we have to resolve, that, you know, something is going to cause the end of the world, or somebody's trying to disrupt the order. Well,
if you remember, dude, in the first movie, the big conflict was, my dad's going to be mad that you had cops come to my house. Like, that was the fucking conflict in the first movie with the bad guy, the quote-unquote bad guy, right? The Asian guys. And then in the second movie, they upped it a little bit, right? Because you had Tyrese had to get involved.
Yeah.
And then in Tokyo Drift, it was, I want to date this girl. Like, it was literally just, I want to date the girl. That was the big conflict. And I don't really get along with my Air Force dad. Like, fuck.
And I'm in Japan. And I have nothing to do.
Right. And that was it. And then you get to the fourth movie and the fifth movie and the sixth movie. And this is what I'm saying. They just have to ramp it up and ramp it up and ramp it up and ramp it up. And it's like, at what point do they just go to the moon? Or see, Mars?
I think that's the thing where, and this is true for any film franchise, is it comes out, it does insanely well. They do a second one, does insanely well. They do a third one, does insanely well. And they keep going and going because the interest is always there, because you have those fans now who are invested in the series.
But I mean, even if you look at things like I think the closest thing that you can kind of go with is that's had this many films aside from like some of the horror franchises is like Rocky.
Right. But
Rocky had to reset.
Right.
At what point does this have to reset? Because there's got to be a moment, dude, where it gets too big and it gets too crazy. Like Rocky IV and Rocky V were a fucking mess. And they were a mess because the franchise had gotten so far away. Well,
that's the thing is that with this, now that they have this offshoot of Hobbs and Shaw, they have another.
Right, but they've started this one at the apex of where the old ones left off. No, but
that's what I mean, is that now they have this other franchise they can build off of if it does well, and it'll do well.
Right, no.
But that's what I'm saying, is that it's not, there's, for this franchise, there's, I don't feel there's ever going to be a point where like, we've got to reset this and restart, unless they have a bomb of a film.
Well, but here's the thing, Tokyo Drift was a bomb. Like, it did not make money.
Because when it came out, people were like, oh, we're going to see Vin, you know, it didn't have the characters that people knew.
Well, the problem was they leaked that Vin Diesel was back in it, and he was only in it for the last fucking 8 seconds. And that was the real issue.
Right.
Right. But then when you go forward, and what I'm saying is like, then they kind of reset with 4. They took it back to the first group of people. Right. And I get that, because it almost was like they were trying to do like what Halloween did, where it was like that anthology series where it doesn't follow Michael Myers for, you know, Halloween 3 and 4. But then they had to reset and bring it back, which they've already done, right? So they've already done that with this. They've already brought it back to the originals. But now they've gotten so far removed from what it was originally that, dude, they have to do something. You can't just have Vin Diesel keep going up against megalomaniac fucking supervillains. It's not going to work forever.
So, and I think we're getting off the topic of the actual film that we went and saw and talking about the franchise itself a little too much. But at some
point, I completely 100% disagree with you, dude, because there is nothing left to talk about with that movie, because that movie was exactly what you expect. And there's nothing else to say, really, aside from you get some cameos. Like, that's really all we have left to talk about with the movie. That's why we've switched over to talking about the franchise, because we have to, after reviewing 4 of these goddamn movies on this show, I am out of shit to say. I'll be honest, dude, because it's been the same movie for the last 5 fucking iterations.
There's my thing, in no offense, in some offense, there's your answer for if they're going to ever reset it. That's a no.
And see, I actually disagree, though. And I wholeheartedly disagree. And the reason being is that eventually, at some point in the future, people are going to get tired.
Well, yeah, it's going to get tired because how many times can Vin Diesel
look at the Pirates movies? Films? Look at the Pirates movies.
They stopped after how many?
I think they're still making another one now, aren't they?
That's not going to have Jack Sparrow in it.
But they're still going. But they had to reset because people got tired of Jack Sparrow.
Right.
It happened.
But it happened after, what, four films?
Sure, but how many years?
But there's so many years in between the films.
Sure. But what I'm saying, though, dude, is that that franchise is almost the same age as the Fast and Furious movies. Fast and Furious movies are a little bit older. A little bit. Not a lot.
Right.
The franchise is very similar in age. There were more years in between the Pirates movies than we've had with the Fast and Furious movies, especially recently. Because there was actually a pretty big gap, I think, between 3 and 4 on the Fast and Furious movies. And then there's just been one every single fucking year.
Right.
Right? Because that's the new thing, is that you're going to get one of these movies every year. And it's honestly, I would say it's kind of nice to have this break from the Vin Diesel-led cast. Honestly, it is. It's nice. No,
this I would prefer if they just stuck with this and just completely...
Well, and I actually agree with that because this at least makes sense because both of these guys, their backstory is they are special forces. That is their fucking backstory. So it makes sense that they would be called on to stop the apocalypse, right?
Right.
Like it makes sense that these are the two dudes but that you would call.
So I think you're talking about a reset, I would think that if they want to do that to kind of still keep the series, you know, kind of fresh and not run it dry or more drier than they already have, is this next film with Vin Diesel is his last.
And I wish I felt like that was what they were going to do.
But they're not going to because...
Right. He's signed on for, I think, another 3 movies.
And as long as he's willing to come back and he signs that contract, he's going to be in them. And the thing is that... I think this might be where, I don't know, maybe you and I differ on this, on I think films in general, for some part... honestly, this is not a series. Like, this franchise is just one that I just don't give a shit if it keeps going or if it ends, because I'm not going to line up to go see, you know, I'll wait till it comes out on HBO or something.
I think what bothers me the most here about all of this is that this new trend of, and I say new, but it's been going on for years, this trend of everything's got to be funny, serious dramas, what used to be a drama or what used to be just an action movie, now has to be so chock full of comedy that it blurs that line. And we don't get real action movies. We don't get real dramas. We don't get real comedies. You know, you just don't anymore. Like the closest thing we get to a real comedy is something Seth Rogen's in, right? Like that's it. You get a Seth Rogen comedy once every fucking 2 years. And if you want to watch Netflix, you can watch Adam Sandler be an idiot. Like those are the comedies that we get. We get the slapsticky, you know, lowbrow humor.
Is that comedy... Comedy as a genre was originally set to make fun of reality.
Sure. And dude, that's fine.
But that's what I mean. And the reason why now everything is chock full of jokes and comedies aren't real comedies. And this is just my opinion, is that everything now is offensive. Everything now is a protected whatever. And people can't look at themselves and say and laugh. People can't sit there and, you know, and just laugh about things that, you know, that it's just something. It's like it's their own little nuance that makes them unique and everything, but they can't stand back and maybe laugh at it a little bit.
And that's exactly my point, though, Greg, is that we have lost the ability to do those things.
No, but that's what I mean. That's why that's why comedies aren't real comedies anymore. Like if you take a look at, and I'll go from comedies and action, I'll go through one each. Like if you go with comedies. And if you look at some of the great comedies like Blazing Saddles can never be made today. Blazing Saddles would never fly.
That's like saying that you couldn't make American History X today. Because you couldn't.
No, but that's
you
that's
absolutely
my,
couldn't. But because it's because it's a different climate.
And no,
it's,
but that's, it's, but that's it's, what I mean is that
the culture is completely
but
different.
But that's what I'm saying is that everything is a protected class. Everybody is offended by something. So now everything is kind of a filtered, watered down version of what it used to be. So action films now have comedy filtered in to make it a little easier for people to swallow because, oh, God, I don't like all the violence and I don't like all the harsh words.
Well, and like let's be clear, though, because there are still television shows that don't have to have comedy.
No, I'm solely going with movies. I'm not talking about I understand film that. And TV in general.
I understand that because TV in general is actually at this point, and I know Mike and I have had this conversation before, is I actually think TV is a more artistic medium than movies are at this point. And that's not how it used to be. It didn't used to be that way. But that is how it's gone.
Is that now you have I think we should just do a separate show about all of this because we're now making this into a separate show.
No, and I understand what you're saying, Greg.
But my thing is like you have things that are on like Amazon that are Amazon originals, like movies and shows and Netflix originals and things like that that are pushing the envelope like movies used to do, but it's on a smaller platform.
Sure. But you see, here's my whole thing with it is that it's a smaller platform with a wider audience.
Right. But that's what I'm saying is that and that's the change of the climate is that people that are wanting to make these, you know, the, I don't want to say artsy films, but the films that are, you know, that are a true action film or true drama or true thriller or true comedy.
That's television now.
That's
it's absolutely exactly. Television. No, because you also then have because of all the streaming services, you don't have to follow the MPAA ratings. Right.
Right.
And because it's on television for one, and you don't really have to follow the TV ratings because it's streaming service, which means it's not on ABC, NBC, CBS. Right. So you don't have to worry about it fitting into the box. You can use the F word. You can say, you know, bitch, you can say all of those things that for years you couldn't say on television. Right. Now you can say all those things. But to get back to the Fast and the Furious movie that we went and saw, I think at this point we've gone so far off the rails that we're just going to have to do the spoiler section right now. Yeah.
Let's just get the spoiler section out of the way. Let's rate it.
Spoilers are going to be real short. It's not going to be crazy. We're going to give our rating here on the new rating system, which I'm not going to give you a full breakdown on it, but essentially guys, it's, you know, 0 to 40, what, 40 to
70, I think
70
or 69.
No, either way, guys, it's like 60 to 70 sucks. 80. No, it's not like that. But anyway,
it's thumbs down, thumbs to the side, thumbs up. And then fuck yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the fuck yeah movies are like 90 and above.
Yeah.
Is what it is. And those are going to be rare. So it's 70 to 90 is thumbs up. I think it's
40 to 69%.
Something like that. Yeah.
Is midway.
And then anything below that sucks. So anyway, before we do the spoilers, we'll do the percentage. All right. For me personally, as a movie, this gets a 55. I honestly despise this movie. I do understand that it will do well commercially. I understand that there will be a lot of people that like this movie and that I am in the minority. I know that for the first time in my white privileged ass life, I am in the minority and I understand that. And I'm okay with being in the minority on this. Greg, what do you think?
I'm like this. I'm like,
Greg's got his finger pointed about, I don't know what, 45 degrees down.
Yeah, it's a midway between shit and entertained.
Right.
Because, I mean, I was entertained by this film, and that's what I walked in expecting. But at the same time, it was just like, all right, we get it. They don't like each other. All right, we get it. And, like, they pound home these things, and it's like, you only got to do it once, and we got it.
Well, and that's the thing, is, like, they hit the same note over and over and over.
And when you walk out of the film, again, the note that they were hitting is that family is family. And
well, right. And we'll get into that in the spoiler section. That's going to come up in a second, but just real quick guys, to break down the rating system again, it's 1 to 40, 41 to 70, 71 to 90, 91 to 100. That's starts off with Get Fisted. It's a movie. Hell yeah. And kicks ass. This movie, I gave it a 55. Greg, you gave it a,
I'm probably like maybe a little bit above you.
So you're a 60
probably.
So we'll split the difference. We'll say it's a 57 and a half with put it in the, it's a movie category and probably on the lower end of that.
Yeah.
Because once again, guys, it's a Fast and the Furious movie. You're getting exactly what you pay for. You know what it is going in. There's no surprise there. There's no craziness that isn't too big for this franchise. And so that's exactly what it is. So sit tight and we will do some spoilers here in just a minute. All right, guys, welcome back here to Critique Revolve on Rain Man Digital, where we're going to give you some spoilers now for Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. Honestly, Greg, I think the biggest spoiler for me was how much Ryan Reynolds was actually in the movie.
Which, like, I mean, I like seeing Ryan Reynolds, but I just feel like it was kind of...
There's so many jokes already And he was just so much funnier than everyone else.
And that's what things like he could have been the comedic. And
that would have been portion. Fine.
That would have been fine.
Well, and they also had Kevin Hart doing quite a bit of comedy as well. And if that was the only comedy in this movie, I'd have been fine with
it. And see, that's what goes back to like my whole thing about if this was like a cheesy 80s action film.
Right.
Is you'd have those one or two guys that popped
in. Was it Carl Weathers in
Carl Weathers in Die Hard,
right?
You know, he was kind of the comedic relief. He was like the stereotypical fat cop. Like, you know, he had a bunch of Twinkies.
Whoa, they're shooting at me. Whoa. Like,
you know, it was that, and then you had the limo driver in Die Hard.
Oh, right. The guy in the back of the limo, like on the cell phone, yeah, like joking like around and shit. Yeah.
He's like, you know, like kind of like the cool, like, you know, like Fresh Prince type character. Here's the thing.
That was what used to make action movies. That was kind of the break in the action. It was the reprieve.
Right. That's what I mean.
We've lost that. And that now that all the comedy is interwoven, you don't have that up and down,
The thing is,
it's just constant.
And you had it in those movies, like, and Die Hard is a great example of that, is you had those two characters were the comedic relief. So in this film, Kevin Hart and Ryan Reynolds were the comedic relief.
They should have been.
And that's what they should have been. And then you can have The Rock and Jason Statham, I'm sorry, Dwayne Johnson, doing kind of like little one-liners, you know, here and there in the film, kind of like.
But it doesn't need to be everything they say. No, but that's what I'm saying.
And it could have been like how Bruce Willis had his in Die Hard.
Sure, because he did have some, you know, he had some funny moments.
You know, and so like you have that, and that's what I think action films have, you know, most action films have kind of lost, is they interweave so much comedy to make it almost like an easier pill for people to swallow that this movie is violent. And that's like, that's what you're there to see for an action film, is you're there to see violence. You're there to see action. I understand it's a hard word now for people to understand, but that's what it's action, not comedy.
Well, and that's the thing, is that everything has become comedy at this point. This movie is no different than everything else that we've seen. If anything, it actually goes even farther into the comedic realm. And it is super, super frustrating from a film like reviewer standpoint. Like, and I understand that, like, the masses, that's what they want. I get it.
And they want funny bits, and that's great, and that's fine.
It takes
a movie that in premise would be a fun film. Like a fun popcorn film.
Absolutely. If this was like we said earlier, if they had gone the 80s like route, buddy cop route with it, I would have loved it.
The rating would have been better, and
absolutely.
As reviewers, we would have enjoyed it more.
But the problem is that they didn't take themselves seriously, but they also took themselves too seriously. You know?
They went on one end of the spectrum, then they realized, ooh, maybe we're going too far, and then they went to the opposite end. And the thing with that, and really those are like the big spoilers. And the other one is that, you know, the theme through the film, or that theme that they started the film, and then they don't really carry through with Dwayne Johnson or The Rock.
Well, so it starts with Dwayne with his kid.
And so his kid doesn't know.
The family.
So family, he doesn't family, know. And he family. Tries to explain. And he kind of utters, you know, like he kind of says like, oh, they're dead.
He doesn't say things happen.
Yeah,
he says things happen and you move on. Yeah, and you move on. And so what you get a lot with this movie is that they have like this, because of course the over arc for all of the Fast and the Furious movies have always been family.
Right.
And with Statham's character, it's his fucking sister, and his mom's in the movie, Helen Mirren. And that has always been the constant for him. And the family for Dwayne was always the girl, the kid, who we don't know who her mom is, which is weird. Like the kid doesn't know who her mom is, which is also fucking weird, but whatever. Well,
it never really came up.
Well, it came up in this one though.
Her family tree has like,
her family tree is literally her, him, and a question mark.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? I mean, if I'm that kid's teacher, I'm going, wait, did you come out of your dad?
No, The Rock cooked her up.
Right, exactly. So anyway,
that's what The Rock was cooking.
That little girl, Jesus Christ, is he a Republican senator?
God.
Yeah, dude, I went there. Anyway, but no, and so you have like that thing, and then the family thing just kind of goes away for a minute.
And you kind of get that with Jason Statham and his sister.
You do, but
his sister's
smoking hot.
God.
But anyway, and then it comes back around and you get it again with The Rock, and they go to Samoa, and you know, he sees his family, and for David and Tony, and those of you that know Tony the Fistmeister and David, his little brother, you guys, I love Mama Sabal. You know this.
Mama Sabal is the best. Is me and Brian's adopted mom.
Absolutely. She's the best. And this movie, there will be part of it that is difficult for you guys to watch. And I do apologize for that if you do see it.
When I saw, when they go to Samoa, and you meet The Rock's family and you meet The Rock's mom or you know, Hobbs's mom, it's for me seeing it, it automatically was Mama Sabal.
It was difficult. Like, and, I'm not going to lie. It was difficult.
And watching it, I'm just like, you see that thing and you're just like, all right, cool. Shit. Can we move on from this part?
Right. No, exactly. And every time they went back to her, I was like, God damn it. Like,
and so you meet his family and then you kind of learn Hobbs's history and why he never went back.
Well, and the thing is this movie actually gives you the backstory for both Hobbs and Statham and why they are viewed as like blackballed outcasts.
Right.
Which is kind of neat that you finally get, like, especially with Statham's character, with Shaw's character, because
you don't really know.
We didn't know. We just knew that there was, he was disavowed.
He was a ghost. And, he was, you know, yeah, and exactly. This like other stuff. And then, you know, you have Hobbs.
So from a storytelling standpoint, those parts of this movie were fantastic.
And that's the thing is that, again, to harken back, if the comedy wasn't interwoven and they just had those little comedic breaks, this would have been a great film, because you get to learn about these characters who, when they are first introduced, when you first get introduced to Hobbs, he's like, I'm coming to get you. Nothing's going to stop me. You know, he's got that kind of, you know, he's got that tough Samoan attitude where it's like, you know, they're warriors. That's what they are. That's their culture. And then, you know, Shaw's introduced, and Shaw's just kind of like, when he's introduced, like, they're like, oh, he's a ghost. And they give him a little, and they give you a little bit of what he was. And then, but that's it. And you're like, well, what's the rest of their backstory? And this movie does that. And those elements are great. And you find out about Hobbs's, you find out about Shaw's, and at the end, everything kind of weaves together. And like, oh, like, that was pretty cool, like, to find out like where they both came from, and to find out that almost kind of like what led Hobbs to become like.
Oh, also, real quick, we talked about the soldiers and how generic they were. How the fuck do mercenaries lose to islanders with sticks?
Well, no, those are traditional Samoan weapons. That's
sure. They weren't traditional Samoan warriors.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, no, they weren't. But
they had, again, sticks.
His point is that at the end, there's basically a point
where it's a giant battle where they're just spearing dudes.
And they do. And the guns
these are guys that are trained in hand to hand combat.
And they're getting
their asses beat by islanders with sticks. Fucking stupid. I'm sorry. Fucking ridiculous. Shoot him in the face. Be done with it. Shoot him in the fucking face. Like, just get it done. I'm so tired of this. Like, and also, like, anytime that, like, the good guy has to fight more than one bad guy, only one bad guy can run at him. Maybe a second bad guy, so he can use the first bad guy's face to block the punch. Like, fuck off, man. You get jumped and you go down. That's how that works. With that rant, guys, I think that's actually going to do it for us here on Critique Revolve.
This is how we're ending the show.
Is me being just so done with all of it. Once again, guys, 57.5% from the reviewers here. It is an entertaining movie if you like that sort of thing. From a filmmaker standpoint, it is a huge disappointment. So, with that, guys, I will say good night. Greg, tell everybody you love them.
Good night, everybody. I love you all.
All right, guys, have a good one.
The Corova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet, or Synthomesc, or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultra-violence.